we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Apple and Google released their first SDKs and APIs for COVID contact tracing. An ex-Aussie high-ranking public servant refuses to install the COVID tracking app. Environmentalists call for Michael Moore's film to be deplatformed. And ICANN tanks the .org sale. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Access of Easy. My name is Mark Jeftovic, and this is episode 144. We're taping this on May the 5th, 2020. Show notes for this week's edition will be at accessofeasy.com/144. Let's do the quotes. Last week was, there must be no barriers to freedom of inquiry. There is no place for dogma in science. The scientist is free and must be free to ask any question, to doubt any assertion, to seek for any evidence, to correct any errors. That was Robert Oppenheimer. The winner was Lucien Pan. I think Richard Parrott beat him to the punch, but Richard already won one this year, and it's one per year per customer. This week's quote is, the bulk of misinformation still comes from the class of people calling for censorship. They want their monopoly back. Remember the rules. You can't search this up online. And the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes page gets their next domain or web hosting renewal on us. And remember, we're now operating off of accessofeasy.com. That's AXIS of easy.com. Tell all your friends, follow us on Mastodon and Twitter. And also the podcast is going out via Stitcher and iTunes and Spotify. So if you can leave us a review there and give us a rating, that will also help us out a lot. Okay, so Apple and Google released the first SDKs and API endpoints for COVID contact tracing. On Apple's side, the beta 3 version of iOS 13.5 contains the initial version of the Exposure Notification API for COVID-19. Google's also released their endpoints and SDK. The system works like this. Quote, when two people are in close range with proximity detected by Bluetooth, their phones will exchange anonymous identifiers. If an individual gets diagnosed with COVID-19, they can have their device transmit a list of everybody they've been in contact with to the cloud. The second person's phone will periodically download a list of everyone that has tested positive in their area. If a match occurs, they will be notified and prompted to contact health authorities. End quote. At this stage, Apple and Google, they're only making the SDK and API endpoints available to public health entities, and then they're going to gradually open access to additional developers later. Kevin Kelly's 68 Bits of Unsolicited Advice for Happiness. Kevin Kelly is the founding editor of Wired. I said was because I'm not sure if he is still the editor of Wired. Anyhow, he also wrote a few books about the new digital landscape. 1994's Out of Control had a big effect on me, and then 1999, New Rules for the New Economy, I read, but I actually disagreed with most of it, and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons I'm the only guy who co-founded an internet business at exactly the right time and didn't become a billionaire as a result of it. Maybe I should have paid more attention to that book. Anyway, last week, Mr. Kelly turned 68 years old. Happy belated birthday, if by any chance you actually hear this. And he blogged 68 bits of unsolicited advice, including things like, you know, I'm positive that in 100 years, much of what I take to be true today will be proved to be wrong, maybe even embarrassingly wrong. And I try really hard to identify what it is that I am wrong about today. overall, it's a pretty good list of aphorisms and a little bit of positivity and optimism amid this deluge of negativity and craziness. ICANN tanks the .org sale, so it looks like the Save.org initiative has been successful, at least for now. We've been following this. If you've been following along, the Internet Society entered into an agreement to sell the Public Interest Registry, which operates .org, to a private equity firm called Ethos Capital. It was just too much money for them to turn down. I wrote a blog post about that. It'll be in the show notes again today. Certain aspects of the deal kind of smelled funny. I said that at the time. Many people said it at the time. No aspersion towards Internet Society, but just there seemed to be some inside baseball going on there. So the California Attorney General started asking some questions, and that culminated in a decision last week by ICANN to refuse the request for a change of control in the registry. Quote, after completing extensive due diligence, the ICANN board finds that withholding consent of the transfer of PIR from the Internet Society to Ethos Capital is reasonable and the right thing to do. End quote. So that means the deal's off. And I got a hat tip here to Richard Parrott, whose name has come up again this episode. Also, ICANN, the public comment period for the new Rights and Protection Mechanism, PDP, ended yesterday. George Kirikos sent me a link on it. He's our resident domain policy expert, and he thinks the process was largely rigged, captured by special interests. They actually squeezed him out of the process, wouldn't even let him comment, and it opens the door to add some pretty draconian takedown remedies to the UDRP and URS domain dispute mechanisms. So don't say we weren't warned, but it looks like it's going forward. Environmentalists call for the Michael Moore film to be deplatformed. So this year on Earth Day saw the release of a new Michael Moore-backed documentary called Planet of the Humans. Michael Moore is the executive producer. It was directed by Jeff Gibbs. So Moore, we all know, he's a left-leaning filmmaker. His previous works included criticisms of corporate pillaging, the gun industry, the Iraq War, not to mention capitalism itself. This time, he turned his criticism towards green energy, the new Green Deal sort of alt-energy narrative, and some of the more tenuous aspects of the business of being green. So, quote, the film argues that electric cars and solar energy are unreliable and rely upon fossil fuels to function. It also attacks figures including Al Gore for bolstering corporations that push flawed technologies over real solutions to the climate crisis. So, guess what happened? He is getting attacked from a wide swath of environmentalists and climate activists. They've criticized the film for being riddled with half-truth, misinformation, oil industry talking points, and they're even demanding that the film be taken down entirely. Josh Fox, who's another documentarist who made the anti-fracking film Gasland, penned a letter signed by a lot of people saying that the film should be removed. At one point, the online documentary library Films for Action did actually take the video down, but they later reinstated it because, quote, they did not want accusations of censorship to give the film more power, end quote. Too late. And I mentioned that in my book as well, Unassailable, Chapter 4. Does cancel culture even work? No, it doesn't. So the film already has over 3 million views on YouTube. They actually made a version of the film available in its entirety on YouTube, and we downloaded it and we put it up on Axis of Easy just in case YouTube obliges them and takes that movie down as well. I think that's a remote possibility, but who knows in this topsy-turvy world. The link to it is in the show notes as well. Amazon used data from third-party sellers to create knockoff products. This has been going on for a long time. I remember hearing stories about this years ago. One of the double-edged realities of being a successful retailer through Amazon is that if you're too successful, the giant's going to knock off your own product and make their own version of it. Then they're going to undercut you on their own platform. It seems, you know, a little unfair, but that's how it goes in that ecosystem. It brought them some scrutiny from the U.S. Congress and EU antitrust investigators. Last year, they admitted to Congress that they do this, but they said that they only use aggregated data from across the third-party resellers and that they don't look at individual reseller data or products when devising, you know, how they're going to knock off your products. But a Wall Street Journal investigation found that at least 20 employees within Amazon's private label division did exactly that, looking at how individual third-party retailers were pricing their products, how much it cost them for shipping, what their return rates were, so that they could use that data to craft Amazon's own competing knockoffs more effectively. Gotta love the company store. China arrests volunteers who uploaded coronavirus data to GitHub. So this one's via Quartz. Dissidents in China are using a GitHub project called Terminus 2049 to preserve coronavirus data that they're worried would otherwise be deleted by authorities. Quote, a group of volunteers in China who work to prevent digital records of the coronavirus outbreak from being scrubbed by censors are now targets of a crackdown. One of the rogue uploaders was arrested and accused with picking quarrels and provoking trouble. That's actually what they're charged with, and it's frequently used against dissidents in China. I know a lot of people, including myself, who would probably be in the brig if that was an actual law here. Anyway, the repository includes an interview with Ai Fen, a Wuhan doctor claiming to be the first to reveal the existence of COVID-19, and she was reprimanded for her trouble. Ex-Aussie high-ranking public servant refuses to install the COVID tracking app. So if you remember, last week we reported on how Australia's new coronavirus contact tracing app will be voluntary to download and install, unless, of course, not enough of the population actually volunteers to install it, at which point it becomes mandatory. And I think the magic number was 40% of the population had to do it. And if they don't get that kind of buy-in, then it becomes compulsory. So among the first prominent resistors to this is a senior advisor, a former senior advisor to Australia's Digital Transformation Agency. His name's Professor Leslie Seaback. Now he is the head of the Australian National University Cyber Institute. He says he's not going to install the app. He cites the Australian government's long track record in overreach and grabbing as much data as possible whenever possible. So he says, quote, I am concerned because once these things are taken, you don't get them back. The government does not have a record of rolling any of these things back, end quote. That's a data point to an old adage I quote all the time, that there is no such thing as a temporary government program. Okay, let's get an update on the EasyDNS Fold at Home team. So thanks to everybody who's jumped on this team and helping us with the global effort to do molecular folding calculations to address the coronavirus outbreak. Our team is doing quite well. We're up at 1,338. That's our ranking right now. We've got over 6,000 work units. We got 9 nodes contributing more than 1 million credits. So extra special thanks to Brewjack, Zero Derivative, GDF, TIMF, or TIMF, whichever one you are, Bill Pye, Blitherman, OPM, JB Martin 6, and Phyllis Alardis. Thanks a lot for your efforts in this, and thanks to everybody on the EasyDNS Fold at Home team. I should actually put our team number in there if you want to join, but I forgot to this week. But if you do want to join, you just go to foldathome.org, foldingathome.org, actually. And then just do a team search, and you'll find our team number, and you put that in your configuration, and away you go. On Access of Easy this week, we did our second eSalon. So that was myself and Jesse Hirsch discussed Amazon as the company store, kleptocracy as the central organizing principle of our society, deplatforming all nonconforming thought as misinformation, the attraction of authoritarianism, and are the big tech mavens modern-day philosopher kings or just self-indulgent narcissists? Charles couldn't make the podcast this week. He was on KunstlerCast around the same time. Give that a listen. It's pretty good. Jesse also wrote a great pair of articles about the value of free speech and the role of surveillance during the pandemic. And Charles, a couple came off of his feed about why we can't solve a systemic crisis with more money printing and how coronavirus is exacerbating societal divides. And for my part, I wrote a piece over on guerrilla capitalism about the collision between conspiracy theory and radical uncertainty. And that's part of my ongoing Jackpot Chronicles series. All of that is in the show notes page and show notes for this week, which is accessofeasy.com/144. By the way, you know, last year, my wife put out her debut romance suspense novel called Torn. And a lot of you supported her and followed her on Goodreads and picked up the book and that sort of thing. And that's that. Really, thanks for that. She's putting out a novella. Comes out tomorrow. It's a collection. It's two short stories. It comes out tomorrow. It's called Twist of Fate. It's on our website, applewhite.ca. So if you're into romance suspense, go check it out and we'll appreciate it. Once again, the show notes, accessofeasy.com/144. Leave a review or rating for us on your favorite podcast platforms, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify. Stay safe, stay healthy. We'll talk to you all next week. Thanks.